It's powerful. It's responsive. It handles beautifully. And it'll blow the doors off anything else in its class. And right now, we'll let you take one out for a test drive overnight. Just visit an authorized Apple dealer and test drive a Macintosh.
Hello, and welcome to Colcast's Best 30-plus Minute Apple Conversation. You're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah. Joining me today, now back on a MacBook, no longer writing his stories on his iPhone, Buster Heine is here.
Heyo.
Heyo, sounding sexy as ever. All right, also with us, he's running Cult of Mac while Leander cries in the fetal position over his looming book deadline. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey, so many tears.
Such a good friend. Do you go over there and tap his cheek with a tissue? Tell him it's going to be okay?
Yeah, it's really sad.
And also with us, another new Cult of Mac writer. After the show, we're going to haze him, probably strip him down to his skivvies, cover him with egg whites and flour. That actually might be illegal. You might need to rethink this strategy, Lewis. Ian, I didn't even ask you how your last name is pronounced. So I'm going to try Ian Fuchs.
Nailed it. That's impressive.
Well, it was either that or another word that I can't say on this show because it's a family show. It's Fuchs.
Correct.
And I can't imagine it could have been the other way, the other pronunciation. Who would have a last name with such a dirty word in it?
I don't know. Germans.
A porn star. So you're German. So is it Fuchs?
Well, my descendants are German. We'll go with that.
Got it. Okay. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Thanks.
How long have you been writing for Cult of Mac? I don't even know, honestly.
4 days.
No. Wow, seriously?
Leander had me starting on a project in, I want to say, February. And so my first two official articles have gone up in the last week, but I have a whole bunch more in the works.
Wow, lucky you. We made Alex E. Heath wait how long, Buster?
Dude.
Before we let him on the show.
Years. He had to beg.
It was a year. He kept begging and crying about it. And at a certain point, we were not allowing him on just because he wanted to be on so bad.
Yeah.
And then finally we did, and the whole show went downwards quickly.
We fixed it.
Yeah, but I think... Yeah, we did. We definitely fixed it. I'm sure it'll be much better with Ian, though. So here's what we got on the docket this week. Ladies and gentlemen, what a show do we have for you guys this week. So we're going to talk about this Apple field trip event. I know what you're thinking. Oh, man, I don't really care about that. It all seems so boring. We're just going to touch on the highlights, the cool stuff that came out of the event, the stuff that we think that you'll probably want to know about. And yes, we're going to be talking about the new iPad. And I know what you're thinking. Again, so boring. Don't care about the new iPad, but I'm going to tell you why I am very excited for this iPad. And I think this is actually a really good iPad upgrade for a lot of people. So we can touch on that. We're also going to compare the iPad versus the iPad Pro in case you're not really sure which one you should get. They're really delineating these lines and making them different. And, you know, one's affordable and one's kind of outrageously expensive. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll be talking about a plus-sized Apple Watch, the Apple Watch Plus, ? And we'll wrap up the show with more of your questions. I've gone through and pulled the best questions out of my Twitter feed that you all have asked me. And we've got some really good ones here. And we'll cover those at the end of the show. I almost forgot Ian is here. I probably should have mentioned this 10 minutes ago. Because he was at the Apple Education event. So he's going to be telling us the vibe of the room, what it was like. And we'll be weaving his experience into the story of what Apple released that day. Before we hop right into some quick news items, let me go ahead and say thank you to Pitney Bowes for supporting this episode. No matter what you send or how often, Pitney Bowes has your sending solution. Print postage from your office and take advantage of special discounts such as saving 3 cents per letter and up to 39% off USPS shipping rates. Plans start as low as $5 per month. Visit pb.com/cultcast to learn more and sign up for a free trial. That's pb.com/cultcast. Terms apply. See the site for details. Also want to thank Breach for supporting this episode. A podcast team started looking into the biggest hack in history and ended up in the middle of the story. Breach is a new podcast that takes you inside the world's biggest hacks They set out to answer questions about the hack of a huge American company and found themselves investigating a Russian conspiracy. Duh. Subscribe to Breach in your podcast app right now. Do it. Breach. Okay. Let's start with some drive-bys. That's what I'm calling this segment. There's always stories every week that are too small to talk about for very long, and I'm never really sure what to do with them. So I'm going to call them drive-bys. We're going to jam them into this segment, and we're just going to cruise by these stories really quick and get them over with. Okay, so first of all, I just want you guys to know the Space Gray keyboard and mouse, the one that came with the iMac Pro, the $15,000 machine. Well, you can buy them separately now. So if you don't want to plop down thousands and thousands of dollars for an iMac Pro, the Space Gray keyboard cost $149, which is $20 more than the silver keyboard. And the Magic Mouse, the Space Gray Magic Mouse, will set you back $99, while the normal version costs you just $79. So pretty big premium just to get the darker accessories. Buster, would you pay more?
Dude, well, when you were considering, like, people were paying, like, $1,500 on eBay just for the black keyboard and mouse a couple, like, months ago when the iMac Pro came out, like, $20 more is not that bad.
$20 more is a heck of a deal for both those.
Hold on, I'll be right back.
What?
I've got my water guy here.
He's got his water guy here.
Water boy?
He's got his water boy here? I don't even know what that means.
I did not expect that.
Yeah, Buster has water. He's pouring water in every day.
No, our water got turned
off. What did your water boy do?
Dude, they turned off our water the other day because my roommate's a Dagus and like forgot to pay the bill while I was gone.
Forgot to pay the bill. Okay.
And so, oh, yeah. God.
We thought you were talking about one of those water towers with like the crystal water or something. Like Buster only has the freshest water for his abode. That's all he drinks.
That's all I drink.
All he uses for his baths,
too.
My Avion guy is here. I gotta go. Okay, cool. The other thing I was gonna mention is if you buy them separately, you don't get the black lightning cable like you do with the iMac Pro or the Space Gray. So if you want that, you're still gonna have to spend $1,500 on eBay to grab one of those. Let's also talk about iOS 11.3, which was just officially released today, Buster. Let's highlight the new features, would you, old pal?
Oh, dude, there's so many small new features that you probably won't even notice them. One is only for iPhone 10 owners, the new Animoji. There's like four new Animoji. And then I think the biggest update is all the new battery tools. If you remember, Apple got in trouble for throttling people's phones when they had an old battery. That way the CPU wouldn't cause them to crash. Now there's a new tool that tells you like what your battery's health is, like whether it should be replaced. And it also gives you the option to turn off CPU throttling so that it uses all of your CPU power and crashes your phone more often if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. And then there's also some like privacy updates like that. I think it tells you when you're sharing private information or when an app's asking for private information. And then there's like some HomePod software too.
It's in a way it's almost turned into Vista.
What?
Do you remember all those pop-ups from Vista?
It's oh, like the privacy pop-up.
I never used your information. Confirm or deny.
Sorry, I've been a Mac user for a long time. I never used Microsoft's Vista thingy. So
you never used Vista?
No, I don't think I ever
did.
I think
I had a bad rap.
It was
actually not nearly as bad.
Last one I remember using is XP, and that's about it.
The last Microsoft OS you used was XP? Are you serious?
Pretty sure. I mean,
wow, are you never around PCs?
No, I mean, I don't have to for work because this is my job, and then, yeah.
Yeah, but you and I both know there are some cult Mac writers who cult Mac on their PC.
Oh, you mean like Killian Bell?
I don't want to call anyone out.
The Android fan?
Yeah, yeah. Namely, I think I obscured his name with my laughter. I don't want to call anyone out, but I was surprised to learn that there are some cult Mac writers who are on a PC. I was like, seriously?
Oh, I was just going to say, he's not even using like a mod, like a Hackintosh PC or something. Just full PC.
He's using like a HP Omen. Jeez. Or something. The last thing that we should mention is there was a HomePod update. This literally just came out, so we're not actually entirely sure what was included in it, but it looks just to be bug fixes. It doesn't include, you know, update for stereo mode or multi-room, you know, audio supports or anything like that at the moment, which is a huge bummer because I have two HomePods now. I have one that I'm actually using, and then I have one just sitting on standby. I'm not even using it. It's sitting in the box.
Jeez.
And I'm just waiting for stereo mode. But I got such a heck of a deal on this thing, Lewis, that I couldn't pass it up. I got it for, it's brand new. I got it for $280 on eBay. Nice. And it has the Apple Care warranty on it and everything. So I was like, I got to get it now. But you know, the HomePods must not be selling as well as they expected, because you can pick these up on eBay right now for $330 pretty regularly, and sometimes even less. So if you're thinking about buying a HomePod, I know I've mentioned this on past shows, but eBay is the way to go. And many of them that I've looked at anyway, they all have the Apple Care warranty. So it's kind of a heck of a deal if you're looking to get your hands on one. Then every once in a while, you can get one for even cheaper, like I did. So I've just got two sitting around. So there were some Siri updates. Ian, you were mentioning some Siri updates as well for HomePod, right?
Yeah, it just came across it on Twitter before we started this, that a couple people were saying that the HomePod would have issues if you were trying to use Siri to, like, say, add a reminder to things instead of the Reminders app, and that stuff has been worked out or fleshed out a little better and is more reliable with the HomePod. Now, I don't know how accurate that is. I don't have a HomePod. I haven't tested it with a HomePod. But allegedly, the Siri commands for third-party apps are better.
Okay. Well, there you have it. I'll have to test that out as well. But let's move on. Let's talk about the field trip event, Ian. Well, actually, first, let me just do a highlight of all the stuff that was announced. We got a new 9.7-inch iPad, as we were expecting, with Apple Pencil support. We got updates to iWork with Apple Pencil support. We got updated classroom app and a new schoolwork cloud app that will help teachers do a plethora of things inside the classroom, distribute assignments, track student progress, that type of stuff. ClassKit API, which allows developers to more easily build education apps for the classroom. And then iCloud storage was upgraded for students and teachers. They previously had 5 gigabytes like the rest of us plebeians. Now they get free storage up to 200 gigabytes, which is a huge increase and pretty cool if you're a student or a teacher. Ian was there in Chicago at the school, arm in arm with Tim Cook, went out for drinks afterwards. It was a huge party. Ian, what was it like being at the event? What were some of your thoughts about what they announced?
For people who aren't from the Chicago area or haven't been to the Chicago area, Lane Tech, the school where they held this at, is a massive school. Like, it is, it's a monster. I don't think I've seen a school bigger than this that's not a college. Like,
how many students does it have?
I don't know the head count offhand.
Oh, okay, sorry. Go ahead.
But it's the facility itself is gigantic. So you show up to this school, and basically it was just a fairly quick check-in process. Fairly rainy. Get inside, and the hallways are lined with all these Apple employees. You know, green hoodies or green sweatshirts, and these yellow beanies. They all look like these kind of ridiculous Green Bay Packers minions things, just lining the halls. Basically went in, hung out in the press area for a little bit, which was, you know, a lot of standing around, drinking coffee, people getting excited about their stuff, and then went into the auditorium. Super cool auditorium. I know I had sent Lewis some pictures of this. I don't know if they can make it to the show notes or not, but like the auditorium is very impressive. Although, as I think Buster pointed out before the keynote had started, it's not as big of a space as Apple has used for some of their events, which was kind of surprising. I know there was, still a lot of seating, probably, you know, several hundred or maybe 600-700 seats. And like 200 of those seats were for school employees and students from schools all around the country. And so it was very heavily focused on, we want to show the people who are going to be potentially using this stuff in real life what it's like, or what our vision is for all of this. You know, like you said, the event went off. Basically, we got the iPad, we got a bunch of software stuff. The Mac got like the shortest mention in the world, which was basically the classroom was coming to the Mac, and everyone seems bummed out that there was no new Mac. But I really think when you look at the educational market and where schools are willing to put money on this stuff and the IT support side of things, computers is a pain. The iCloud storage is a huge deal. You know, the upgrade from 5 to 200 for students and teachers. And the biggest reason that's a huge deal is there was never a way for schools to even pay to upgrade that storage.
Oh.
So it was, if you were using, you know, iCloud for your storage as a school, each person got 5 gigs. You could offer Apple all the money in the world. As far as I know, there was no price tag on more storage. And so the 200 gig upgrade is huge, but they still don't have the option to pay for more.
Of course. So they're just stuck with 200 gigs.
Right. Which 200, I mean, is a lot, especially when, you know, most of the things students are probably doing on these devices is basic documents and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Apple's pitch and kind of the stuff that we saw after the event in the hands-on area was very much interactive with Swift Playgrounds,
mm-hmm.
and with their everyone can create curriculum that they're pushing now, and that basically revolves around GarageBand, the Apple Pencil, and like drawing stuff, clips, not clips? iMovie, because why not, and and using photos, whether it's in the iWork application or in any of the other apps that Apple offers. And when you start thinking about those things, like an audio file that you create could get quite large.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're making songs or whatever, that could get big. If you're shooting video and you're shooting any significant amount of video as a student, those things can get big. And if they're relying on iCloud for a lot of this stuff, like 200 gigs still doesn't seem like quite enough. But I think the general vibe I got out of people was 200 gigs is better than 5. And so we're not going to complain about the 200. But I think long term, Apple still needs to figure out an upgrade model or, you know, a better solution for storage.
Just as a side note, I talked about all these new tools and stuff with teachers just to kind of get their opinions. And I didn't realize how integrated Google is with many classrooms, I should say. Google already has a lot of tools that are similar to what Apple is trying to do here. And Apple is so far behind.
Yeah.
Every student in some of these classrooms get a Chromebook because they're so dirt cheap. They're like sometimes $100, $150, and they all integrate with Google Docs. And they all have a lot of storage space. Just if I remember correctly, I think they get like a terabyte of space.
It's a ton.
So Apple really is playing catch up here. But they did seem to have some tools that seemed like they were much more innovative than Apple's tools or than Google's tools. Like the iWork stuff they showed, where a kid could churn in something via Pages, and like the teacher could use like the Apple Pencil and circle areas and take notes basically on the kid's homework and then send it back to them digitally. That looked like it was pretty cool and pretty useful. And then also they have the new schoolwork app where they could assign activities and check on students' progress and tailor their lessons to students. Can you talk a little bit about the schoolwork app? Did you see very many examples of how that works?
So schoolwork is in beta, basically, but they didn't have it on any device that I got to use. They basically showed it during the presentation and gave their pitch for it, which I think schoolwork is probably as similar to what like Google Classroom is right now. Mm-hmm. But the connection between schoolwork and ClassKit is where I think the iPad and Apple is going to, or is taking a step ahead of Google. Because right now, a Chromebook, or you know, if an Android tablet was ever successful, would basically be used for Google Docs, Google Sheets, Google whatever, what's their presentation one?
Slides,
there you go. And so it's basically those three apps, you know, your basic document apps, and then email and a web browser. There's not a lot of other educational stuff there. I mean, yeah, there's educational stuff on the internet, but there's a lot of other garbage on the internet too. And with ClassKit, because an application could be designed to, whether it's like it's a history lesson, or they show these augmented reality like frog dissecting applications, like you can't do that and get the same experience on a Chromebook as you can when you're actually like dissecting a frog, but it's a you know, a frog on a screen, and you're using the Apple Pencil instead of a little scalpel to do it. And so a teacher could assign students within schoolwork to do that task in that application. The student hits a button in schoolwork and it automatically loads the correct app to the right section and walks them through the steps, and the teacher can check in and stuff like that, that doesn't exist in the Google world, or that doesn't exist in like Blackboard or some of these other school-based platforms. So Apple's approach is kind of the next iteration of what schools are doing. And it's this idea that Google is addressing the way that schools are using technology today, and Apple is addressing how schools could use technology tomorrow or next year, or
if they can afford
future.
That technology, that
exactly,
is.
And that becomes a whole nother issue.
That was some of the that was some of the complaints I saw on Twitter about Apple even holding this event at like this super prestigious technical high school, and saying these kinds of tools are only tools that rich schools can use, and that's one of the reasons that Google has been doing as well as it has, is because its software is relatively inexpensive, and then their hardware is as cheap as it gets. I mean, $100 for a Chromebook. There is not a computer that is cheaper than that that will actually work. So I wonder if the Apple model, even though it looks like it's superior in some ways, will get adopted by schools just for the fact that it's Apple and their stuff is expensive. And even though they're offering a pretty inexpensive iPad, a $300 iPad is still much more expensive than a $100 Chromebook. Even though it looks to be more powerful. I saw an example, I'm sure you saw this, they demoed this, I think, of a teacher using her, I think it was an iPad, to open an app on all these students' iPads, yep. and then lock them into that one app. And yep. I was thinking, just that one feature alone is enough to sell me. If I'm a principal, I'm like, dude, I'm all yeah. in on that. True. And that's what I want my teachers to do.
That was a big complaint previously with the iPad, is that these schools would deploy iPads and students would sit in class and then they would end up, you know, checking Facebook or Twitter or doing, you know, who knows what on their right. their iPad instead of whatever they were supposed to be doing in class. And when we were in the hands-on, they had like a mock classroom basically after the keynote where they walked us through like three lessons, a history lesson, a math lesson or science lesson, and a coding lesson. And the instructor did that. You know, they said, you know, now we're going to dive into GarageBand, and they pull up their iPad, they press a button, and iPad launches, or GarageBand launches on every iPad in the room. They click a little switch, and you could hit the home button, you could lock the screen and unlock the screen, but it didn't, there was no way out of it. You couldn't even access Siri while you were doing it. So it was, you were locked into this application doing whatever this app was, or whatever the lesson required.
That's like a David Copperfield magic trick for teachers. And you would think that there would be some easy way to do this before. And this is the first time that Apple has really gotten innovative with keeping students from browsing. I don't know what the kids are browsing these days in class. I'm not even sure I want to know. And if I did know, I'm not sure I could tell you on this podcast, this family-friendly podcast. But can you imagine you're giving all these adolescents iPads and then you can't see their screens and you have no control over what they're actually viewing during class? Doesn't seem like a good recipe for learning. Well, not learning the things that you want them to learn anyway. So any other final thoughts about the education events here, Ian? Anything that we missed or didn't talk about that we should have mentioned?
You know, one thing that I think they tried to stress that I think we'll see maybe play out over the next couple of years, that a lot of the, you know, tech press and stuff like that is kind of overlooking, is schools will, like with the Chromebooks, schools will buy into Chromebooks and they'll spend, say, $100 on a Chromebook for every student. But what is the life expectancy of a Chromebook? Like, they don't have a lot of power to them. Mm. They take a lot of beatings. The hinges on them break, whatever. So they're replacing these all the time. And Google, I don't think, offers any kind of like Apple Care equivalent product for these Chromebooks. So the long-term return on an iPad, I think, is greater. And that right now is something that nobody's really talking about. It's like, an iPad is good for multiple years, multiple classes, whereas a Chromebook is kind of trash after a year. And schools, you know, around at least this area, the Chicago area, schools that have gone in on Chromebooks before, I've heard there's a lot of hardware churn. And so when you start looking at that price tag, like $300 for a school, or let's say $150 for a Chromebook, like if you replace a Chromebook once a year, it only takes 2 years for the iPad to be more cost effective.
I had a teacher tell me, though, that those Chromebooks, their average lifespan in the school district that she taught in was 2 years.
Well, that would be...
change the math. But that's just anecdotal. That's just that one school, right?
So, sure.
So, yeah, that is the big question, is what is the return on investment? How long do the iPads last? I'm going to guess an iPad lasts a lot longer. It's just metal and glass. It doesn't have any moving parts. And
they're repairable.
What's that?
They're repairable, which is another big thing. Is I don't think that you can really service a Chromebook. I think if a Chromebook breaks, recycle it and buy another one. Whereas exactly. An iPad, if the screen breaks, you can take it down to, you know, fix that for you down the street or whatever, and they'll replace a screen on an iPad.
Yeah, you call the Chromebook customer support center. They're like, can you tell me what the problem is, please? And you're like, yeah, it's not working. The hinges are broken. He's like, okay, here's what I need you to do. He's like, you need to grab the Chromebook by both sides. And you're like, yes. And he's like, then you move the Chromebook slowly towards your garbage can, then you just drop it in there. And I'll sell you a new Chromebook for $100. You're like, oh, great, thanks. Problem solved. All righty, well, we need to talk about these iPads. Well, this updated iPad that we were expecting and got many of the features that we were expecting it to get. And I'm excited about it. In fact, I might even buy one of these. That's how excited I am for this iPad. But before we talk about the iPad, let me say a quick thanks to Away for supporting this episode. Away offers high-quality luggage that is designed to be resilient, resourceful, and essential to the way you travel. It's available in a variety of colors and four sizes, including carry-on sizes that are compliant with all major U.S. airlines. The Away suitcase is lightweight. It's made with premium German polycarbonate that's unrivaled in strength and impact resistance. Not to mention, it features a TSA-approved combination lock, four 360-degree spinner wheels, and a patent-pending compression system to help overpackers. Better yet, both sides of the carry-on are able to charge anything that's powered by a USB cord. A single charge will power your iPhone 5 times. So it has a built-in battery pack. So Away sent me one of these suitcases, and I have to say, honestly, it's the most beautiful suitcase I've ever owned. It's really understated. It's sleek. It's minimal. It has a really cool aesthetic, and it's become my new favorite suitcase. I don't travel very often, but I'm excited to use this thing because it has a battery pack built in. It can charge your devices when you're on the go. So I can just tell you from personal experience, if you want a beautiful suitcase, if you don't just want any old suitcase, if you want something that looks nice and also has a lot of technology, like actual travel technology built in, this is something that you should absolutely check out. And you can try Away for 100 days. You can travel with it, see how you like it, and then if any point you decide it's not for you, you can return it for a full refund. So there's no reason not to try it if you're thinking about getting a new suitcase. Shipping is also free within the lower 48 states. And the Away has a lifetime warranty. So if anything breaks, they'll fix it for you. So you've got nothing to lose. Go check it out, awaytravel.com. That is awaytravel.com. If you use promo code CULTCAST during checkout, you'll get $20 off of a suitcase at awaytravel.com. And again, the code to use at checkout is CULTCAST. Okay, let's talk about these iPads. Because according to early benchmarks, the new iPad is the fastest Apple device behind the iPad Pro and the latest iPhone lineup. So before this new iPad was kind of snoozeworthy, they basically took the iPad Air 2 and they basically just turned it into the iPad. And there were no really big updates and it was kind of boring. But now this new iPad has a lot of great technology in it. And it's a pretty fast device. And yes, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles of the iPad Pro, but it's fast. Like I said, it's pretty much identical to the predecessor, the 2017 iPad with the same 9.7-inch display, has the same 8-megapixel camera, the same 1.2-megapixel FaceTime HD camera. And unlike the Pro models, there's no rear flash. And although the iPad does have the quote-unquote retina flash, which is basically when the screen just turns white when you're taking a selfie. I'm not sure how well that actually works, but it does have that. And it also lacks the True Tone ambient color temperature matching feature of the iPad Pro. It doesn't have ProMotion, and the storage options are only 32 gigabytes versus 128 gigabytes, or 32 or 128 gigabytes versus the Pro, which has 64 gigabytes, 256, and 512. And it also has the really sucky first-generation Touch ID, which works, but isn't all that great. But, like I said, it's much faster than the iPads of yesterday. So check this out. The 2018 iPad is about a little less than three times as fast as the iPad Air. If you have an iPad Air 2, it's about twice as fast as that. If you have the 2017 iPad, this is 80% faster than that. So the iPad became a budget machine as of the 2017 iPad. I feel like it's still a budget machine, but now it's actually a performance machine as well. It's not just some boring, snoozeworthy iPad. And you were saying, Ian, before we started recording, that you didn't think this was that exciting unless you have an iPad Air 2. And I was like, well, that's exactly what I have, bro. I have an iPad Air 2.
Do you still use it?
And if you're coming from an older iPad, I use it every day.
Okay.
But there's no reason to upgrade because the iPad Pro is way too expensive for what I need. I don't need an $800 iPad to browse Reddit. And I mean, here's what I do at night, okay? Here's what I use my iPad for. Actually, I don't even really browse Reddit anymore. All I do is watch Fortnite videos before I go to bed.
Fortnite videos? So you don't even play?
Oh my God.
No, I play. I play.
But you get killed but so also, early, you're just like, I guess I'll just have to watch.
Dude, I'm getting destroyed, bro. I'm getting destroyed. I mean, I'm getting spanked so bad, I can hardly believe how bad I'm doing. These guys in Fortnite are so good. So there's this guy named Ninja. We talked about him last show. He's probably making even more than this now. He's making $500,000 to $600,000 a month streaming Fortnite on Twitch.
$600,000?
By the way, $500,000 to $600,000 a month, dude.
No.
Now you know why I'm trying to work on my Fortnite skills, bro.
Is he like really
good?
Get
off this cult cast. He's the best player in the world. Okay. He's incredible. He is godlike in his Fortnite skills. The stuff that this guy does is, I'm going to use the word athletic. You might laugh at me for that. He is so incredibly athletic and elegant in his Fortnite playing. He comes up with solutions to problems in this game that I've never seen people do. And plus, he does it on the fly. Just immediately, his brain comes up with a solution, and he does things to kill people that are inventive and innovative. Anyway, he's incredible to watch. He is an esports athlete at its best. And his YouTube channel, when he was streaming like 2 months ago, he had 1 million subscribers, maybe 1.5 million. He has 6 million subscribers now. And just to give you a little bit more context, some of my favorite YouTubers, like let's use PewDiePie for an example. He's not my favorite, but he's a good example because he has the biggest channel on YouTube. He has like 62 million, 63 million subscribers, okay? And every day he gets 25,000 new subscribers. This is the top channel on YouTube. 25,000 new subscribers a day. Ninja is getting 100,000 subscribers a day right now. He is blowing away everybody else. His channel is getting 1 million subscribers every 10 days. He is absolutely blowing up. So I've been watching his videos at night. We were talking about iPads. How did I get into this? I've been watching his videos every night to improve my skill set, to try to, through osmosis, absorb some of the things that he does. And I actually am getting better. I suck way less than I used to. Anyway, that's what I use my iPad for. And so my iPad Air 2, even though it's slow as hell now, it still works for those purposes. And I just don't want to spend money. I didn't want to buy an iPad, the 2017 model, because it really wasn't any better than what I already had.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to buy an iPad Pro because it was way more than I needed. And the iPad Pro, man, is so expensive.
Yeah.
$800 for the 10.5-inch, that's a lot of money.
And it's not worth it, really. Well, that's what I've been debating with this new iPad, because it's cheap enough and it gets pretty much anything you want done with it. And it's not like the iPad Pro is going to be like a total computer replacement anyway. So I feel like the new iPad is kind of like the best iPad to buy if you're just kind of wanting something for like casual computing, like you're saying.
And now it's not super slow. It's not just old technology packed into an old iPad form factor. It's got an A10 chip, the new one does, and it's fast. So for me, I'm thinking, well, shoot, if I can get a 128 gigabytes for $430.
Yeah.
That's actually not a bad deal. So if you have an older iPad, which I would imagine a lot of people out there do have older iPads because people hold on to their iPads forever. And Buster, as you mentioned, there's just no reason to go with the extra horsepower for the iPad Pro, especially now.
Especially
because,
like, with the Apple Pencil on the lower one, because that was like one reason why I did want the bigger iPad Pro, because Apple Pencil seems awesome. And it is, but like totally not worth upgrading to the iPad Pro alone just for the Pencil. If you're just a casual user, I think.
Yeah, now that it has the Pencil, really, why would you need an iPad Pro? Because you want ProMotion? Because you want a true tone display? Like, those are cool features, mm-hmm. but do you really need those features? Would you even notice if they weren't there? Ian, you've got both of them. You're an iPad elitist. You were sanctimoniously preaching about how the new iPad isn't exciting. What's the difference between these two machines, in your opinion?
So I have the 9.7 iPad Pro from, 2015, 2016, whenever that was announced.
Oh, okay. So you don't... Okay, gotcha.
And then I have an Air 2, And you're 100% right. Like the Air 2 is starting to get slow. It's, I mean, it works fine for watching YouTube and stuff like that, but like you're not going to like cut a 4K movie on it or anything like that. The iPad Pro, even at the 9.7, is more powerful, but comparing the 9.7 iPad Pro to the iPad that they introduced this week, they are near the same spec-wise. So it's what we got this week was basically a $329 iPad Pro from 2016. And so it's not exciting if you are an iPad Pro user, right? Like this is not the iPad for you if you already have an iPad Pro, whether it's the 9.7, the 10.5, the 12.9. Like those are more powerful machines. They have the smart connector, they have ProMotion. Some of them have 4 gigs of RAM instead of 2. Like some of that stuff can make a huge difference. But if you are on an older iPad, like you said, this is a huge deal. This is a super affordable iPad that is in pretty much all regards a better iPad than anything you have.
I kind of wonder who actually does need an iPad Pro, because the features, again, ProMotion, True Color Display, Smart Connector, who actually really needs those Pro features? Are those even Pro features?
I think so. Like the Pro people I would think are like people who are like editing photos, like serious photographers. Like the True Tone Display is really super handy for that. And animators, people that draw, they would like want like the bigger iPad Pro. I don't know. Yeah, that's what I don't see a reason for me to get it, because like Ian's saying, I'm not going to be able to edit any of my 4K videos on the iPad Pro anyway, or do some awesome video editing. So it's not an awesome computing machine either. So yeah, I don't think there's anybody that definitely needs it, unless you're in like a very small niche of like creative space where you're doing drawing or photography or other stuff like that.
That's it. That's exactly it. I think it is a very small niche, because you were talking about people who edit photos, and most of the photo editors that I know are all using laptops.
Right.
They're using Lightroom and they're using a laptop. And I mean, you can edit on an iPad, but it's a diminished experience. It's not as sophisticated as using a computer. And that's true in so many different respects. I mean, people who are editing 4K video are not doing it on an iPad. I'm not saying that you couldn't. You probably could. But why would you use an iPad over Final Cut Pro on a Mac? That just seems crazy to me, because the tools are so much more sophisticated on Mac. So I really do wonder sometimes, who is the iPad Pro actually for? I think it's for people who just want to have the best iPad that you can get. I mean, totally. I want an iPad Pro. I really do.
Yeah.
And I've almost bought one several times, but I always talk myself out of it because it's so expensive. And I'm like, yeah, do I really want to spend that much money for an iPad, something that I'm not using daily for production? I'm just using it for gaffes and laughs and, you know, trying to get better at Fortnite. And someday, maybe that will pay off. Maybe that will be an investment for me, because I'll probably be making $100,000 a month streaming Fortnite. Because I'm so badass at that point, and then that point, maybe it will make more sense to get one. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say here is I need to get better at Fortnite.
Yeah, you do.
Because that solves all my problems. Yeah. I mean, if I just get good enough where I can make...
Quit this podcast, even if I was making 50 grand a month. Player, yeah.
the Fortcast is going to be my new podcast. And it's just going to be me talking about my Fortnite skills, and how great I am at Fortnite, and that cool snipe that I got off the other day. I'll link to this guy's YouTube channel.
Yeah, I want to see it
in the show notes. Dude, it is mind-blowing. It will blow your mind. I watch what he's doing, and sometimes he does it so fast that I can't even figure out what he's doing.
Is he playing on mobile or on console?
No, he's playing on PC.
And you play on PC too?
I play on PC too. Dang. That's the best experience of Fortnite,
yeah,
right,
imagine.
There. And I'm not a PC player, really. I'm more of a console player.
I can do point and shoot way better with a PC than console. And it's so horrible on the iPhone, I can't kill anybody, man.
Well, dude, I don't think you're going to do much better on the PC version. Let me tell you,
think so?
I've been getting blasted on.
Huh? You don't think so? I feel like I would do way better on a PC than on an iPhone. Like,
the reason I don't, and actually Killian brought this point up last show, the reason I don't think that you would do better on a PC is because the iPhone levels the playing ground. Everyone is using the same diminished controls, And so they're not as good. But on PC, these guys who you're playing against are the best players in the world, and they are exacting. They're like surgeons in their snipes and in their aim and everything they do. It's muscle memory for them. And those are the guys that you're playing against on PC, and they will destroy you so fast. So fast.
Okay.
I mean, I don't make it more than 10 seconds in some games.
Really?
Many games, I'm dead a minute in. Yeah.
Damn.
I can't even make it a minute.
Have you made it like top 10 before?
I have made it to top 10, but it's usually because I've been hiding.
Okay, yeah.
Like little biatch. I just go somewhere and hide. Or, you know, you can make it to top 10 pretty easily. All you have to do is not land. So in this game, you jump out of a plane and then you choose where you want to parachute into. And I always parachute into the most populated area. And then, of course, there's like 50 guys there and they all have machine guns and they're all trying to take my life. They're all competing to kill me. But if you want, you can land somewhere that is more remote and then you can kind of sneak around the bushes and trees and hide out and stuff. And you can make it to the end of the game. Making it to the end of the game is not hard. Getting kills is hard. And then winning the game is very hard. Anyway, I could do a whole podcast just on Fortnite because I'm so fascinated with it. And it's become such this strange cultural phenomenon out of nowhere. All of a sudden, it's one of the most popular games in the world.
Yeah, I came back from Hawaii and everybody's talking about Fortnite. And I'm like, what the fuck is Fortnite?
And everyone is watching it on YouTube. Like, all the most popular channels on YouTube are becoming Fortnite channels.
Ridiculous.
So people are just creating videos like how to get the best, how to get kills, how to do snipes, what the best weapons are, where the best drops are. I mean, it's just one video after another. That's all I watch now are Fortnite videos. So anyway, I'll link to Ninja in the show notes. Buster, I'll send you a link so you can check this guy out. He's just incredible. Incredible human specimen. I totally lost track of my spot. Oh, we need to talk about the Apple Watch Plus. Okay, before we do that, let me say another quick thanks to Pitney Bowes for supporting this episode. Pitney Bowes is the industry leader in mailing and shipping solutions. No matter what you send or how often, Pitney Bowes makes it easy to save time and money on your office mailing and shipping. Simply weigh, print, mail, and save. Plus, this is the best part, guys. Going to the post office is the worst, isn't it? It's dreary. Everyone's pale. No one smiles or says please. It's like going to the DMV to get your driver's license, but you could skip all that. You don't have to go to the post office. Pitney Bowes lets you calculate the exact postage that you need and print it at home. You never overpay or underpay. And, you know, the postage rates just went up in January again. Well, Pitney Bowes will save you 3 cents on every letter. And if you ship a lot, you know that every penny counts when you're shipping a lot of stuff. And you can also get access to USPS retail discounts of up to 39% off when you ship via Pitney Bowes. So whether you're sending a letter or a package, you'll save time and money. Plans start at just $5 a month. And for our listeners, Pitney Bowes is offering a free trial, so you're sure to find the solution that's right for your business. Check out their site and learn more at pb.com/cultcast. Try it for free. Terms and conditions apply. See the site for details. That's pb.com/cultcast. Okay, let's talk about this plus-sized Apple Watch. This is not even something I knew that I wanted until I read about it, and I was like, ooh, girl, I would love to have a plus-size watch. Buster, are you with me?
Oh, yeah. Plus-size is the best.
I mean, are you going with that 38-millimeter?
No, I'd go bigger. I'd go bigger.
I'd probably do, like, 150 millimeters.
Oh, really? Just full arm coated in watch, pretty much.
I wanted to cover my entire forearm. Yeah. That's the right size for me. Actually, I tried on a 38 millimeter the other day, and I was surprised that I actually kind of liked it.
Oh,
is that technically the ladies' watch? They don't call it the ladies' watch.
No, I mean, it's just for smaller, daintier, feminine wrists. That's all.
Yeah, which is surprising because I have wrists like Popeye, and they're just covered with hair and muscles. But the 38 millimeter didn't look too bad. So, and it's cheaper, which I liked. But I wouldn't mind going larger too. I like my phones and my Apple Watch is big with a big screen. So this comes from KGI securities analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, the only guy who ever gets anything right. And he was saying that Apple is going to be making the display up to 15% larger than the current one, which would give a 1.9-inch screen. And he was saying the reason they might be doing this is because a larger display would give them room for a bigger battery, which would allow them to build in more health features, and they're trying to bolster those. And also, it's just nice to have a larger screen. People like larger screen items. And the Apple Watch models are expected to launch sometime between July and September. That's roughly a year after the Series 3 debuted. I would imagine they're going to do something big on this next Apple Watch. Yeah. It really hasn't changed much since version 1.
No, which I've...
But maybe the big screen is it.
But if there's also more health features, and if they're able to give me like more than one day's battery life, like that's one thing that always prevents me from getting the Apple Watch, because my other smartwatch, it has a full week of battery life pretty much. So if they could give like a little bit more.
You have a Garmin, right?
Yeah.
And do you tend to wear that one more than the Apple Watch?
I don't even have an Apple Watch anymore, because I never, like after I lost my last one, I decided it just wasn't worth it. Yeah.
I've thought about selling mine so many times because the Apple Watch Series 0, dude, it's so slow.
Yeah.
It's so slow. I mean, it really was a beta product, quite honestly. I kept expecting Apple to update the software and make it better, but it's just so damn slow. Every time I use it, I can hardly scan it. The other day, I kid you not, I raised my wrist to look at the time, and it took a full second for the screen to appear.
It's true. The original one is slow. But the Series 3 is much faster, and you know, it lasts, the battery lasts a couple days on that now. I mean, you know, probably not if you're like, you know, going out for a 4-hour run or something. But,
right, and that's why I like my Garmin is, I mean, it doesn't last for a week if I'm running every day, but, you know, if I go on mm-hmm. like 4 runs in a week, it's usually still fine.
Well, I'll tell you, I used to, occasionally, my original Apple Watch wouldn't even last an entire day, but now this newer one totally lasts a day, never a problem, and some nights even we'll just wear it to bed to, you know, for sleep tracking, and uh-huh. wake up the next day, still got 50% at least, maybe
holy
60.
Smokes. Yeah, you could never do that with the Series 0. No.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, and it's true, it's so slow after a while, but yeah.
It's infuriating.
This thing's talking about having a bigger watch face, right? But they didn't mention anything about it perhaps being a skinnier watch, right? I mean, less high or whatever.
You don't, I mean, I wouldn't like that, I don't think. I thought the Apple Watch was perfectly thick.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't
dude,
mind having it be thinner.
Really? My Garmin's, like, big compared to the Apple Watch. The thing's a tank. Like,
huh.
So I don't think it looks that bad. And a lot of, like, rich, expensive watches are thicker too,
pretty bulky.
Yeah, but they look rugged. You know, this thing just kind of looks—I don't know—looks like a little mini iPad strapped to my wrist.
Yeah, I guess if it was like thinner, then I would be afraid of like an Apple Watch bend gate. Then you know,
it's never going to bend on your wrist. Oh my God, if you bend it while it's on your wrist, Christ, you're
I don't know,
break your wrist.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm
I wouldn't mind
shit.
A little bit thinner either. But I don't think we're going to get that anytime soon. If they're trying to make the battery bigger, then I would be surprised if they actually made the actual watch body thinner, because that would defeat the purpose, wouldn't it? Alrighty, well, let's move into the last segment. You ask, we answer. Thank you to everyone who sent questions in for this. I got so many great questions. Again, you guys are coming up with such good stuff. So we're going to run through some of the best questions that I could find, and we'll wrap up the show with this. So Ian, during this segment, just feel free to jump in. If you have anything you want to say, just feel free to interrupt me or Lewis or Buster. You just pipe in whenever you want, okay?
Got it.
Okay. Let's start with this one, except for now. What?
Okay.
God, so rude. I was joking, guys, just trying to be polite. Jeez. Can't even get my thoughts together here. Let's start with this one from Jeff Curtis. He says, are the iPad Mini, Mac Mini, and iPod Touch going to be refreshed this year or killed off? Well, let me just point out the Mac Mini hasn't been updated since October of 2014. iPad Mini, March 2017 was the last time it got an update. You know what? I do think they're going to update the Mac Mini this year, Jeff, and here's why I think this. Apple rarely goes more than 4 years without updating a Mac. So it's been almost 4 years now since the Mac Mini has had any type of update, internals or external. And so I think this is the year. I think this is the year they're finally going to update the Mac Mini. But who knows what they're going to do with it. I don't know if they're going to do something drastic or if they're just going to give a spec bump. My guess is they're going to just give it a spec bump. Tim Cook did say previously that Apple was still serious about the Mac Mini, but it's hard to take him seriously because they just do nothing with it. I don't know. Any thoughts on that, anyone?
Yeah, I mean, just last October, Tim Cook said it's still an important part of the Apple lineup. I mean, Why wouldn't they? Why? I can't imagine why they would just kill that off.
No, I don't think they're going to kill it. The question is, will they make it better in any way whatsoever? My cousin's been waiting for a Mac Mini for a year. He really wants a Mac Mini. Buster, I know you want one too, don't you? Buster's dead.
He's dealing with the water guy.
Oh, we actually we might have just lost Buster. We'll see if he rejoins.
From my perspective, I'm wondering if the Mac Mini update, if we do get one, will be in step with a Mac Pro update. You know, they've been saying there's a Mac Pro coming. If they're going to spend the time to re-envision the Mac Pro and pack it full of, you know, video cards and and whatever else, that might be an opportunity to say, you know, we're already working on a new, you know, desktop Mac that doesn't, like, a, you know, a headless Mac of some sort. If the Mac Pro and Mac Mini come out, and the Mac Mini is like, you know, the iPad to the iPad Pro and the Mac Pro, right, like that kind of model, and just bringing that forward, and that maybe what they're waiting for is just the opportunity to drop the word Mini off of Mac Mini.
I like where your head's at. That's right. Maybe when they do the Mac Pro, we'll get both of them at the same time. I like that. And Apple has promised to take Mac more seriously, so I think this is going to be the year. As far as the iPad Mini, I do think they're going to update it. I don't think it's going to be exciting. They'll just do a spec bump. The iPod Touch, I don't know how well that's selling, but I would imagine that there's still a market for it, for kids especially, for people who don't want an iPhone. And it's still one of the best music playing devices out there if you don't have a phone. That's really the caveat, is how many people are using these who don't have phones. But it would be a sad day when Apple kills off the iPod Touch. Okay, Mike Kirkham says, would a re-released iPod Classic, which worked with Apple Music and enabled offline listening, be of interest to you? I miss being able to take my music offline with me without the restraints of my iPhones or my phone's storage and battery. Do they not do offline music with Apple Music? Do you guys know?
You can, yes.
You can, okay. So, good, because you've been able to do that, you know, on Spotify since like 1996. And I don't use it very often, but it is nice when you're traveling to have that feature available. And I don't know, an iPod Classic, what would an iPod Classic be? How would it be different than the iPod Touch? Maybe it would just have more storage, I guess. So would you be interested in an iPod that had 2 terabytes of storage, for example? Any takers on that? A 2 terabyte iPod Classic?
I mean, isn't your issue here that 2 terabytes is useless if you're going to stream most of the time? And like, I know he's asking like to pull Apple Music stuff offline, but then there becomes a whole like, is it piracy or like, what are you doing with that? Like, if you pull it onto the device and then the device never connects to a network again, does it, like, this whole era of streaming, it makes that really complicated. I think really what Mike might be looking for is just an iPod Touch.
Well, there you go, Mike. You don't want an iPod Classic. You want an iPod Touch. Well, I think I remember Mike. If I do, if I'm not conflating Mike with somebody else, he has a really large iTunes music collection, and he also uses Apple Music. Mike, forgive me if this is not you that I should be talking about here, but and there were some people that reached out to me on Twitter that said they still have these really large iTunes collections, and they want a way to carry their collections everywhere they go. Like, for instance, I have a 140 gigabyte iTunes music collection, but I haven't used it in years. It's probably been 5 years since I've even touched it. And I still have it backed up somewhere because it's all my music, but I don't use any of it because it's all on Spotify. And so I just stream it. And so for me, I don't think I'd have any use for an iPod Classic because I rarely need to have more than 10 or 20 gigabytes of storage space for offline music listening. But if you had a large iTunes collection, I can see why you would want something like this. I think it would be cool just for nostalgia reasons. So I'm going to give it to you, Mike. Yes, we want an iPod Classic. It has to have a massive hard drive, though. It has to have like 2 terabytes, a 2 terabyte SSD, so you can carry your entire music collection. I have a friend who has 1,500 CDs, and his music collection is enormous. And for guys like that, those are the guys that need like a huge iPod Classic. Okay. Bruce Cuthbert asks, what are the best apps for home control? Lights, cameras, devices, scenes, scripts, floor plans on Macs, smartphones, and tablets. Lewis, your thoughts.
Oh, my God. I just use the Home app.
Me too.
That's it. I use that, and I use occasionally I use one of the things that comes with the piece of hardware, but I have not. I don't want to spend any more time than necessary setting that stuff up, and I find the whole map to be completely fine.
What does he mean by floor plans? Are we talking like house building floor plans, or like?
I'm just guessing he means managing all the devices in his home. I'm not sure what floor plans means either.
Rooms of the house, yeah.
Okay,
that's what I think he means.
I mean, look at him. He looks like he's very well kept. He's got a very nice beard. He's probably got a lot of money, and he has several floors in his house. Probably he probably lives in a mansion.
Oh,
he
so
probably
you
has like
have a
whole
floor plan and know where all your smart shit's.
Yeah, and he wants to be able to turn the lights off in his butler's quarters, and then he could like sit there and giggle about that. It also seems to be. I think he's wearing a Steve Jobs mock turtleneck as well. Yeah, so he's very serious about Apple devices.
He's definitely and doing better than us, and he's probably smarter than us. So,
well, look at him. He definitely is smarter than us. Yeah. I also like his face and his head is very symmetrical, which is rare. So he's got a good look about him. I can tell you your whole life story from your Twitter avatar.
Bruce.
Yeah. Bruce, just keep downloading the show multiple times a day, would you? That's really what's important. Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think the home app does everything that he's looking for, and it does it better than anything else out there. There is another app from Elgato called the Eve app, which does do some things better than the home app. And I kind of like the layout a little bit more in certain respects. But for the most part, I just use the home app because there's really nothing that beats it. And it does everything that you're doing. Also, he's talking about cameras. Oh, he must be talking about security cameras.
Like, yeah.
I was like, well, now I think he might be like a porn director or something. Lights, cameras, devices, floor plans. It's like, dude, what scripts? Yeah, he must be talking about security cameras. But there's not very many HomeKit enabled security cameras out there right now. I mean, the best cameras out there are from Arlo, are the Arlo cameras, and unfortunately, they're not HomeKit enabled. Although you were using one, weren't you, Lewis? Didn't you have one that you were using?
Yeah,
that was HomeKit enabled?
Omna. Is good, and the Logitech
Linksys, right?
Circle 2, I believe, is good.
The what?
The Logitech Circle 2, I believe, is good. I still have not got my hands on one of those, but I hear it's good. There's I did, oddly, just this week I read something about an app called, what's it called? HomeCam, that lets you look at multiple HomeKit camera live streams at once. I saw somebody talking on Twitter about how great it is. I haven't downloaded it because I've only got one camera. I got zero use for it right now. But the instant that I get my hands on one of those Circle 2 cameras, I'm going to try that app. It's not a free app. I think it costs like $3 or $5.
Ooh, heck no.
But, I could see how that would make sense. Although if you went with Omni, well, actually, I don't think you can look at two different streams at once with the even if you have two Omni cameras. So that app is supposedly good. Like I said, I can't verify it. I never used it, but
okay, Bruce. For right now, just go with the home app. It's really the best of what's around at this point, at this moment. Okay, last question comes from the man with two first names, Brian Justin. He wants to know Commando or Predator.
Ooh.
Is this an underwear question, or are we talking about movies?
I thought we were talking about underwear.
What are Predator underwear?
I don't know, but I feel like that's my MO is Predator.
Oh, yeah. Over Commando?
Yeah, over Commando. I don't know.
You got to think about it this way.
Predator
Commando
sounds more salacious.
Oh, yeah. And as a man who doesn't ever wear underpants, and I mean ever, I'm tempted to go with Commando. But Predator was the start of a franchise. Think how many great Predator movies came after the first one.
Uh-huh.
Like Alien versus Predator.
Is there a Commando movie?
Yeah, there's a Commando movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger as one of his best.
Oh, jeez.
Classic.
God, I didn't realize we were talking about movies here.
I'm not sure what you thought we were actually talking about. So he was taking my underpants comment seriously. Apparently, he's like, I honestly don't prefer underpants.
Well, dude, Commando
either.
Came out before I was born, so that's just not a fair question. I think.
What year did Commando come out? It was probably like 82 85. Or something. 85.
And I only know that because I didn't know what it was either.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, apparently
holy
your dog
moly.
Is a big
sorry,
fan
sorry,
as well.
Sorry,
Lewis, you were alive. Commando or Predator?
You know what? I don't think I've ever seen Commando. I might have to go watch that.
It's actually a pretty decent film.
Yeah?
What's it's basically Arnold Schwarzenegger as commando. A commando, just blowing shit up, trying to get his daughter back. And I think, is it Commando or is it Predator where he yells, "Get to the chopper!
Predator.
Get to the chopper!" I think that's Commando. Yeah. Okay, really? I take back everything that I said. Definitely Commando. If it led to that line, then it's one of the greatest movies ever made. Nay, films. Yeah, well, let's just wrap it up on that note, because this conversation is dying quickly. let's go.
Get to the chopper.
Come on. Oh, hey, don't forget to check out Breach, the new podcast that takes you inside the world's biggest hacks. They set out to answer questions about the hack of a huge American company and found themselves investigating a Russian conspiracy. Subscribe to Breach, BREACH, in your podcast app right now. That's all the cool cast we have for you guys this week. Hey, if you want to come say hi to us on Twitter, you can say what's up, you can ask us about any of today's stories, or you could ask questions for a future segment that we'll answer. Come say hi to us on Twitter. I'm at AerofunBusters, BST3R. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. Ian, where are you at on Twitter?
At Ian Fuchs.
Okay, at Ian Fuchs. There you are. This has been the Coldcast, the best 30-minute plus album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Coldcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Buster, you're back now. You want to take this one?
Oh, next time, brothers.
Oh, my goodness. That was the perfect ending.
So get to the chopper.
How's Leander, Lewis? Is he crying?
Oh, yeah.
Is he on death watch?
You know what? The other day, like last week was super rainy in San Francisco, and not just rainy, but like windy and weird, and so everybody, you know, I didn't go into the office at all. Not one day last week. Maybe one day. But I can't remember. I went in there. Went in there this week. Amy and I were in there, and at the end of the day, Leander's like, I don't know how to say this, but would it be okay if you didn't come in tomorrow? Because I just really need to concentrate on the book. And so basically we're banned for the rest of the week. Oh, yeah, bummer, dude. Hate to work from home. Oh, no.
He also doesn't want to see you. He doesn't want you to see him crawled up in the fetal position, sucking on his thumb.
He was so polite about it. It was actually quite charming.
Jeez, that's how you know he's really stressed.
That's how you know he's really British.
That's how you know he's about to lose it. He's actually being nice to everyone.